My name is Justin Caudill, and I'd like to welcome you to the Dissection Room. I spent the last 10 years of my career working in a gross anatomy lab. Now, gross in this instance doesn't mean disgusting, although there are definitely going to be those who feel differently. Gross just means you can see it with the naked eye. Now, my purpose, or my job, I guess you could say, was to dissect other humans for the purpose of instructing healthcare professionals of all types. But these are typically people who don't have access to human cadavers in a university setting. So like EMTs and paramedics are a great example of this. You have to understand, there is knowledge that can be only gained from seeing things in person, right? This is not just true to anatomy, this is just true in general. Empirical data is important, right? Being able to see these things, objectively understand them, there's just knowledge that is gained that is extremely unique. So this is kind of how it typically works, although there are differences depending on your region and especially your country of origin. I only am familiar with body donation programs in the United States, but there are definitely body donation programs outside of the United States that just might be operating under different criteria. But if your body is donated to science and education, that's more than just saying yes on your driver's license, right? This is actually bequeathing the body to a specific program. Well, what would happen is the body would become embalmed. So the only a couple of incisions are made, typically in the neck or down in the thigh. And that's so the embalmers can actually insert the embalming preservatives into the tissues and, like the name suggests, preserve them. It sounds terrible, but it's essentially pickling. It's a really weird form of pickle, but I mean, I know that's kind of a strange analogy, but it's a very good one. And what you're left with is a preserved human cadaver that is then ready for dissection. And so my job is to dissect them, and then I get what's called a prosection. A prosection is a dissected body part that can then be used for instruction. And depending on who you're trying to teach and what they need to know, the prosection may need to be different or be dissected differently. So for instance, if you're trying to teach the muscular system, say like the shoulder area, well, what aspect of the shoulder area? There's a lot of muscles there. Do we need to talk about the deep musculature or the superficial musculature? There's a lot of variability in that. So this is where the skill and expertise comes into play of what do I want to teach or what do I need to teach? And then you perform that dissection and have the prosection. But when you do this for a while, you know, there's certain things that you just tend to think about more often than not. I think of them as life lessons. And these are all things that I have thought about a lot, in some cases daily, over the past 10 years of my life. And I truly believe them to be important and powerful for everyone to know and understand. Yet I also understand that it's not likely most people are going to find themselves in a similar situation. So what I want to do is talk about these three life lessons that I believe are important to being human and something that everyone can benefit from learning. So the first life lesson is that I truly believe it's important to confront your mortality often. Now, this doesn't mean you need to hyper-focus on death. That is obviously unhealthy to your mental health. But I also believe avoiding the topic and the concept of it is equally bad. It's just different. And it's something that we really only see in the West. Other cultures, not every culture, but many other cultures around the world, it's not again that they look forward to death or anything like that, as much though they are still more familiarized with the process itself. They interact with the dead in much different ways than we do typically in the West, and they just have a different understanding of it. And there's a lot of value in there, and I'm far from the first to actually say this. In fact, Caitlin Doughty. Caitlin Doughty is a mortician, wonderful author, and also you may be familiar with her YouTube channel, Ask a Mortician. This is her book, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Other Lessons from the Crematory. Such a great book. She has multiple books. But the reason I'm bringing up Caitlin is because I'm a huge fan of what she is doing, and she has made significant progress in bringing awareness to death and dying and everything that goes around it. She's been on this mission for years, and she's doing such a great job. And if you really want to have just a great read, I couldn't recommend her books enough. They're funny, but they're deep, and they're just confronting things that we all are going to have to confront at some point. You know, I understand that anxiety comes with the concept and thoughts of dying. But at the same time, there's a lot of things that happen around death that if we just avoid the concept and avoid it as though it's just not going to happen, that's not going to be useful to us. And what I mean is funeral costs. Are you going to be cremated? You know, what do you do with, like, what about debts? What do you do about, like, you know, burial plots? When you start going through all these things that need to happen when someone dies, if someone's not prepared, all of that is just thrust on the family. This is a conversation I have all the time. When people are asking, what is the benefit of donating your body to science and education? It's like, well, you don't have to pay funeral costs. In fact, the body donation program takes your body and embalms them, or embalms you, and then is able to cremate you and give the cremains back to the family if that's what you choose. Right? All of a sudden you're like, you're taking choices in the negative sense, but you're taking responsibilities away from the family in the sense that saying, like, hey, we're going to take care of this for you. By giving your body to us, that incredible gift, this is what we're going to give in return. And that's only one option. There's other options. There's other things to think about. But then from the deep and philosophical side of things, at the same time, you know, I think there's real value in confronting the anxiety and fear that comes with dying, because it's going to happen. You know, I know a lot of really amazing advancements are being made in the biological sciences right now. And it's very possible that we could live to be hundreds of years old if our AI overlords allow that. Maybe thousands, maybe millions. But if even if you follow that logical train to its conclusion and say that we are able to permanently stave off death, the universe will end at some point. Death is coming. It sounds dark, but it's true. And so what I've learned working with the dead is that to just think about this often, to ask myself, am I doing what I want to do? Am I living the way I want to live? Because this could end at any time. And I don't mean this in this dark and macabre type of way. It's more factual. I find that by confronting the idea of my mortality often, I live a better life. I appreciate things more. And that is something that I think everyone can benefit from. Again, that doesn't mean you need to be happy or excited that you're going to die at some point. It's not as though you're running towards death, you know? Like, yes, me next. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying, don't avoid it. Don't avoid it to such a degree that it fills you with tremendous dread. Yet that's the normal response. I mean, that's part of being human. We're self-aware. We understand the concept of death. We know what that means to an extent. And this isn't about religion or, you know, whether there's an afterlife or not. I'm just saying you're going to die. And that's okay. And for me, working with body donors, that is such an incredible gift that they have given. Is my job is one of those things where it's like, oh, this person isn't alive anymore. I'm not going to be alive anymore at some point. Maybe that's tomorrow. Maybe that's later today. Maybe that's in 30, 40, 1,000 years with today's technology. Doesn't matter. It's coming. And it's something that every one of us needs to just understand and confront. And I promise you, I can say this from experience. If you don't dwell on it, if you don't hyper-focus on it, but just understand that it's factual, it's much easier to lead a better life. Now, the second life lesson is to take your time. Early on in my career, I was performing a dissection where I was removing the integumentary system layer by layer, making my way towards the muscular system. And so I was dissecting an area about the size of a napkin. And you have to understand that dissection can be done quickly if you don't care about doing a good job. But if you care about doing a good job, you are not going to be able to do it quickly. You have to take your time. There's no way around that. And that's because there are so many structures inside of your body. Again, sounds like an obvious statement. It's something that I knew intellectually before I ever performed a single dissection. And yet, when you see it, there's this wave of understanding that comes towards you that is just, you can't get from a classroom. And then all of a sudden you find this responsibility in the tedious aspect of the work. You need to do this right. If you're going to do this, you need to do this correctly. And I remember I'm sitting there, again, dissecting this napkin-sized surface area, removing the epidermis and dermis, getting to the hypodermis. So I'm basically removing the first two layers of the skin, meeting the fatty subcutaneous tissue underneath. And in it, you know, just starting to see just the differences in the adipose tissue, whether the size of a certain cell or how the blood vessels are coursing through it. As you're removing the hypodermis and making your way towards, well, not even the hypodermis, you're removing the fatty layer of the hypodermis, and all of a sudden you run into this really tough layer called the fibrous layer. And just seeing how the collagen spindles are together, and as you're just slowly making your way through, this is taking hours upon hours, like in a napkin-sized area. But the amount of time that I spent with just that, this is one of my very first times dissecting. I learned more about the integumentary system in those hours than I had understood prior to that with tens, 20, maybe even 100 plus hours in the classroom. Right, like up to that point, you could have asked me any question about the integumentary system and I could have told you what it was. But then all of a sudden, there was this information that I just didn't understand, and I didn't even know that I didn't understand, that was only gained through the act of dissection. Now, obviously, people can't dissect everything, you know, but at the same time, I think the way to really simplify what happened was just simply taking my time with things. I'm a notoriously, or at least to myself notoriously, slow learner. Always have been, my entire life. People just get things quicker than I do. But what I have done well is listen my entire life. I hear what needs to be said, and then what I do is I kind of like stew it. I simmer it. I think about it. There's a word for this, actually. It's called ruminate, and ruminate can be bad, but ruminate really just means to sit and think about something. But that is what I will do. Oftentimes, if I'm in a conversation where I'm being exposed to new information, I really don't provide an opinion because I need to think about it. Now, that can definitely be bad in certain situations, right? It's good in many circumstances to respond and react right away. But what I find is if there's value to be gained from taking my time, I will take my time with it. I do whatever I can to not make decisions when I'm in an emotional state. Or just if I feel this is too quick, I will take my time. I think about things. I simmer. I stew. I try to understand it. And obviously, again, this can become pathological, and that's where ruminating can be bad. This is where you have to find that balance. Because when you're dissecting, you can dissect too much. You can spend too much time teasing out the structures, too much, to the point where it really just becomes procrastination. And that's exactly what you don't want to do. But there is real value in just taking your time with things, thinking them through, and go slowly with it. Because there's an intimacy with whatever you're trying to think about or do, right? That comes out of this process. And that intimacy, I really, truly believe to be special. Now, it may mean that in a conversation, you don't have much value to bring, right? You don't have a great response then and there. I'm the type of person that if I have a conversation with you about something I've never heard about before, I'll probably want to talk about it with you 2.5 weeks later after I've given it a lot of thought. And you're well beyond that, right? I'm that guy's like, hey, do you know that thing we talked about 2.5 weeks ago? I got opinions now. I get that that's not the best for a conversation right then and there, but I also do find that I'm more confident and comfortable in those opinions because I've given it that time. So while I've always been a slow learner, the framework around really taking my time was impressed upon me through dissection, understanding that teasing out structures and just really doing a great job at these things has so much value, because what you can do is look at things more clearly. If you have a question, I can go to that structure really easily. But if you do a haphazard, very quick dissection, someone asking, hey, what about this structure? That's right. Oh, sorry. It's not available to us. We can't see it. Or I cut through it because I was going too quickly. All of a sudden, it's just, I mean, it's those are excuses. Yes, but they're understandable. But you missed out on something. And that's what taking your time can really do, is give you the time to ask the right questions and to get the correct answers. And the third life lesson is that every body is different. Now, again, this doesn't sound profound at all, but how I came to think about this is, again, unconventional. So the example I like to give when I'm talking about this is the rectus abdominis muscle. It's your six-pack muscle. If I were to teach you about rectus abdominis in the classroom, I would show you that there are eight individual segments. They're running from superior to inferior. They're parallel to one another. So there's two rows of four segments. Well, for 20% of the population, there's actually 10 segments. And for 2% of the population, there's 12. So then we have to ask ourselves, okay, so what is the truth of the matter? What is rectus abdominis supposed to be? Well, it's not supposed to be anything. That's not how biology works. That's not how nature works. The fact is, and this is going to sound terrible, if I could dissect you and show you, you'd be weird. There's all sorts of things that are different about you. Maybe some of them aren't that big of a deal. Maybe like your appendix is a couple inches, you know, away from where it's supposed to be, I guess we could say. So that's really not consequential on your health or your lifestyle in any significant fashion. But there may be pathological things that we find with you. We just might find quirks of your anatomy. And you realize that anatomy as we know it is really just a science of averages. What we're really talking about is this is what we expect to find. So when I'm dissecting someone, I expect to find eight segments on their rectus abdominis. But if I find 10, that's awesome. That's like really, really cool. If I find 12, which I've never seen, but man, if I found 12, that is really, really cool. But it's not like something's wrong with them since they have 12. It just shows the variability within our species. And this is with everything. Now, some things are far less variable than others. And that comes down to function and overall just, can that person live with that variability, right? So like you have to have a head. The presence of a head is non-variable. Because if it is, that's not conducive with life, and obviously that's just not going to work out. So there's obvious things, but then there's less obvious things. It's like nature is always experimenting, and I don't mean to imply that there's some kind of intention behind this as much as it's just that's how life works. Things are variable. And that is something I've seen so many times in the body. You start to see, oh, look at that. That's different. That's not what I expected. Oh, look at that. That's exactly what I expected, but it still looks kind of cool. Where I'm going with this is, I have realized that that is likely the exact same, or it's likely to be true with people's minds, their personalities, their opinions. If I know for a fact that the body is so variable, seems very intuitive and logical to me to assume that that's the case with their mind. And I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm not a philosopher. But it does seem to me that that's expected. Right? You have to expect the unexpected to an extent. What I'm trying to say here is, understanding how variable the body is has taught me to be understanding in how variable people can be. To be less judgmental in some aspects. Now, I definitely have my opinions. And sometimes I seem more judgmental on things than I really truly am. But I think that's true of all of us. But I also feel like I'm far more accepting of people than I used to be once I started to know more about the body itself. Because it just seems normal, right? That's just people are different. People are weird. Your body's weird. Again, I could dissect you and show you just how weird you are. And maybe you're more average than other people. And it's like, I'm not trying to say that one's better than the other, but at the same time, it's like, if you're more average, is that better? It's just things we need to think about. That nature is not perfect. Things are not perfect. Things are not just the way they are, right? It's not the textbook. There is no textbook for nature. There's variability. There's what we expect, and there's surprises, and there's some things that are far more consistent than others. But in the end of the day, people are different. People are weird. And that's okay. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that everything I just discussed is super profound. Like I've stumbled upon some truths that no one else in the history of mankind has. Like I fully understand how obvious these are in some aspect. However, I also do feel the unconventional path that I took to arrive at these is at least worth discussing in some aspect. Or at least it's worth it to me. Maybe this is just cathartic, right? This is just me talking to a camera and I feel better because I'm able to say these things out loud. Maybe that's all this really is. But at the end of the day, I do hope that you have found some value in this. As obvious as these things may be, my hope is that there's some value hidden inside of there. Thanks for hanging out with me. I'll see you in the next episode.